Okay, good morning. It is Tuesday, May the 31st, 2016. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners, 9 a.m.
11 a.m.
Excuse me, 11 a.m. Whoa. 11 a.m. General discussion. And first on the agenda, we have the, actually, we have the U.S. Forest Service listed as number one, but we have our first one is actually the Airport Strategic Plan. Item two is going first. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, yeah, there had been a desire expressed in previous discussions and meetings for an overall big picture of where it is we think the airports are going and what the vision is, et cetera. So I have put together this draft of a five-year strategic plan, which I would love to present to you here and discuss. And my ultimate aim here is to execute everything in this plan, but to have the full backing of the Board of Commissioners as we do that, obviously, would be a good thing to have going forward. So the way I organized it is that, you know, just from kind of the top down, the overall mission statement and the core beliefs of the what I believe the Airports Department represents to the county and to the people of the county. And then the vision for the next 5 years. Then the large-scale stepping stones along the way, which would be the organization-wide strategies the strategic objectives. Are that those stepping stones along the way over the next 5 years. And then the individual steps to be taken all along the pathway to get there are listed as the 1 to 3 year goals and actions. So just kind of conceptually, that's how it's organized. I was taken aback a little bit at the large number of items that I pulled out of my head, and I listed these things basically chronologically as I see them happening, not necessarily in order of priority, but, you know, we have a lot of irons in the fire and things are in motion already. So those items, some of them aren't even listed in the initial strategic objectives because they're already in place or they're about to be completed, that kind of thing. So then I have the airport weather observation system is an example of that. And I have that listed in the short-term goals, and that's at the top of page 3, for example, underneath the 1 to 3 year goals. This represents, at a minimum, what I see happening here at the two airports over the next 5 years. And, you know, we can go through these rather briefly. And, of course, if anything jumps out at you, I'm happy to discuss that. But we work with the FAA and with the state of Oregon, the Oregon Department of Aviation, to list every year, and it's a rolling list, every year we do a five-year capital improvement plan for the airports. And some airports that are sufficiently developed have a very quiet CIP, and they basically have nothing on the books, and they don't have any developments planned, and there's no airport improvement plan grants programmed in for them over the next 5 years because they're just kind of operating in a static mode, and they don't have a lot of demand for further services or capacity. We are an exception in that regard. Grants Pass has been growing by leaps and bounds, and it seems that every time we make a new facility available or move things around to create more room for growth, it's immediately occupied and taken up. And so the entire time I've been here, and probably for the 10 years of my predecessor, we've never had an empty hangar for more than 15 or 20 minutes, it seems like, and we still have a hangar waiting list. There's a demand for hangars that we can't meet at the moment, at both airports.
Commissioner Walker mentioned this morning the numbers of planes that are stationed at Grants Pass Airport.
Yeah.
How many now?
About 217, yeah, at last count.
I guess
just had two more move in this morning. So.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. And, of course, planes occasionally leave, and I track all of those coming and going. So the FAA maintains a database, and they have a third-party company that verifies everything in that database. Mm-hmm. And so I'll add aircraft ED numbers along with the registered owner and the hangar that they're located in, et cetera. And then they follow up on that to see if the aircraft is, for example, registered as being at another airport. And sometimes that happens when a person moves and they move their plane from one place to the next. The old airport doesn't take their plane off the books until someone calls them up and says, hey, is that guy still here? So.
And then how many are at the Illinois Valley?
About 34.
That's right. You know, I had 263 in my brain.
Yeah. No.
So I'm glad I didn't say anything.
Well, 263 might be close to the total number of planes, you know, in the near future, but that would be at both airports or based here in Josephine County, yeah. But, yep, yep. It's more than people
And it seems to
expect.
Me just two to 3 years ago, it was only like 150 or something out here, wasn't it?
Well,
Are you really, it was...
I don't know.
Ketchup.
Yeah, it was ketchup because the officially listed number when I came on board was 90 at Grants Pass Airport, yeah, and 4 at the Illinois Valley Airport. And those numbers were just completely wrong.
Random.
Yeah, and so I set about a couple of years ago to make that database correct, and it took a little work because, you know, there's a natural resistance to, you know, someone from the government calling you up and saying, hey, where's your plane and what hangar's it in and all that stuff. And, of course, I try to be pretty humanistic about the whole thing, saying, well, this isn't really to track your movements or anything. It's simply because the number of airplanes based at an airport is an essential piece of the formula that the FAA uses to decide whether or not to send grant money your way. Other essential pieces are the number of operations, and that is specifically takeoffs and landings on an annual basis. And at this point, I don't have hard numbers that I can rely on because I installed a camera system that is so far unreliable, and I've been working with the camera vendor to make that right. And the cameras work perfectly, but the recording system is unreliable. And it's part of our infrastructure out there. We have so many power failures, more than 80 a year documented over the last 5 years at each airport. And I got those numbers from PPNL, and I have that report in writing.
It's only 6.5 a month.
Right. But if you don't have a, and we have a really robust UPS, and we have our airport communications, the data link, you know, our charter internet, et cetera, is all running through that UPS, but somehow this camera recording box, it's called a NAS box, and it's 4 terabytes of data that it can store, it drops out and then doesn't come back online. So we have the cameras, we have live cameras, we have everything good, but we have to keep looking at that box every day to make sure it's recording. And so I have made probably 30 phone calls to the vendor over the last 2 years. And that's a sore spot for me. I'm going to start asking for my money back if they don't get really serious about this.
Yeah, I mean, you can see 2, 3, 4 slots. Okay, we can work with that.
Sure.
We're going to
crack that. Well, and, you know, startup issues,
yeah,
that kind
right.
of thing. And, you know, part of the problem is the vendor. I mean, it's SOS. It's a very reputable vendor. That was a new system at the time, and the person who I spoke with, the technician who did the installation, was extremely proficient, and he knew everything about the system and knew how it worked, and I had a pretty high level of confidence in it. But, you know, he's off doing other installations, and I can't get him all the time to come back out to the airport, so they have other techs who aren't as proficient. And so I'm going to have a serious discussion with them very shortly about
it. Yeah, the end result is it keeps dropping out.
Yeah. Yeah, and the main reason I got it was to help verify takeoffs and landings, these operations, which are a critical component of the FAA's justification process for giving us our capital grants. So,
now, without necessarily being specific, name-wise, an anchor tenant, what is the qualifications for an anchor tenant? Say, here at the Illinois Valley Airport.
Yeah.
But what is an anchor tenant? How do you want to get?
It would be somebody who is a fairly large-sized company or corporation or private investor who wants to make a significant investment in a building, a facility at that industrial airpark. So that would involve, when a developer wants to put in a neighborhood, for example, like a tract home development, quite often part of the negotiation and part of the deal that is struck is that they will pay to pave the streets. They will pay for all the infrastructure, the underground utilities, the water, the sewer, the septic, telephone lines, whatever else. So if I can find another anchor tenant who's real, as opposed to, I gave a shot to Manor Community Development and they couldn't perform. So, nothing ventured, nothing gained, I suppose, but somebody like that. I mean, somebody, a major aerospace company or a large firm that perhaps wants to put in a data center or a call center. They are always looking at the demographics of a neighborhood, and they're trying to figure out, do we have enough people with the right education level, the right motivation, the right, the ability to work. And, we've got a lot of people that aren't working out there, and that's a big available market for somebody who might want to come in and start a company out there or establish a West Coast operation. So I'm open. I have a, there's a lot of possibilities out there, and now that we have a permanent permission, if you will, from the FAA to put non-aviation related businesses inside the airport on that airpark, that gives us a tremendous amount of flexibility.
Right.
Yeah. So, but we can't conjure up companies to come in. They
right.
they have to know about us. We can make ourselves available. We can make ourselves known. In the end, it always has to be a viable business case that stands on its own and it pencils out. And, I'd be open to public-private partnership or any combination of things in order to make something happen out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's incredibly discouraging, to have, a company like Ericsson, for example, come out and say, hey, we really want to establish a training range out here and do some operations out here, and they're already done training for the year. They've already completed all their training, and now they're out on contract, on wildfire contracts. So as I had been saying all along, it was a short period of time, and it was probably less than 100 hours total of flight time training, but it would have been an annual lease.
Huge investment in the community.
Well, yeah, while they're there training, they're in town all day, and they need to eat, they need to sleep. Anyway, I'll be looking for more opportunities like that to pursue. Bottom line is what I'm hoping we look like in 5 years is that we have a firmly established commercial aviation presence over on the northeast side of Grants Pass Airport. Once we get in the second parallel taxiway over on Flaming Road near the Siskiyou rappel base, that area will open up for development, and I know that there's demand for hangar space over there and for commercial operators. So I have rolls of engineering drawings in my office that show the McConnells wanted to build a facility there several years ago. Kurt Krause has always wanted to build over there, so he's got Botzer Engineering has designed his facilities. And so that area will be developed. We will have a new hangar access area, hopefully, with about 7 private hangars, T-hangars, maybe 4 box hangars, and 2 commercial hangars over on the southwest side of the runway. And they will be occupied and running. And I'm looking at what the airport looks like in 5 years. And we will be firmly on our way toward a 2,000-foot extension on the main runway there, so that we'll have a total of 6,000 feet. That probably it's not likely to be built inside the 5-year window, but if it's going to be built within 10 years, then we will already be heavily involved in the environmental and determination and the engineering design for that extension of the runway.
And for us non-aviation folks,
yep.
What does that mean? What's the difference between the fours and the six?
What it means is that it'll increase the level of safety for the aircraft that are currently operating at the airport, and it will open up the possibility of companies that operate jets on a regular basis to fly in and out of Grants Pass Airport. Right now, only the very smallest jets that are out there are capable of using a 4,000-foot runway. And it's never the landing length that's at issue. It's how much runway do you need for takeoff. And so if an aircraft have a wide range of loading capabilities. So you have an empty weight and you have a gross weight. And you can load the aircraft anywhere in between those two. So you can fill it with people and not have very much fuel, or you can fill it all the way up with fuel and only take a couple of passengers. Or, you know, it's very flexible. But it's up to the pilot to determine how much weight can that airplane carry and operate safely on a 4,000-foot runway. So especially during the summertime when the temperatures are regularly in the 90s to 100, most jets are going to be really, really limited. They're going to be payload limited to use a 4,000-foot runway. And I would say the majority of them can't even use it even if they were completely empty, because the legal requirement is accelerate stop distance, or another term is balanced field length, and the FAA and the pilots all use these terms to describe the amount of distance you need. Yeah, BFL. So a balanced field length for the aircraft that we have out there operating now, for example, Dutch Bros has a couple of Cessna 441s. Their balanced field length at full gross weight when it's 90 degrees out is over 5,000 feet of runway. So they can't operate fully loaded during the summertime. And that means for them that when they need to take 10 people to Phoenix or to Spokane or someplace, they have to take two airplanes instead of one. They could put 10 people in one airplane, but they wouldn't be able to safely take off on a 4,000-foot runway. If that runway was 6,000 feet, no issues at all. And so when you have what you call length-limited or payload-limited situations like that, the business owners are always clamoring, hey, when are you going to extend the runway? When are we going to have a longer runway here? And it's a very real thing. You know, I mean, it costs them a lot of money if they can't use their aircraft efficiently. So, yeah. So more commercial operations, especially on the northeast side, longer runway. If Paradise Ranch ever gets off the ground and it ever is completed toward anything like its original vision, then a 6,000-foot runway would be absolutely fantastic, because you'd have a huge number of airplanes coming in from long distances, and they would require a longer runway. They typically would be larger turboprops and jets. As an aside, I was up at Sun River Sunday. So I picked up a couple of folks. Sue and I flew to Medford from Ashland, and then we picked up some friends, and the four of us flew to Sun River. And I don't know if you've ever been there or not. It's a resort community. Mm-hmm. The Sun River Resort owns the airport, so it's a privately owned airport. However, they are enrolled in the system with the FAA, and they've committed to operate it every year for 20 years, every time they receive federal money. And I could see Paradise Ranch or something like that being very similar in ambiance to the way Sun River operates, but in almost a better location. I mean, Sun River is out on the Deschutes, and there's horseback riding and golf and all kinds of interesting things out there. That ramp was packed. There were over 100 airplanes parked out there for the Memorial Day weekend, and a lot of people had flown in from all over the country. There were jets of every shape and size, large turboprops, as well as probably 80 or 90 small single-engine airplanes like the one I was flying. So, boy, I mean, that just represents a massive funnel of money just pouring right into that community. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't even imagine how much money they brought in over the weekend. But that's a neat thing, because the resort has at least, they probably have 100 people working at the resort. You know, I mean, we went, and there's four shuttle bus drivers were on duty. They were running four shuttle buses from the airport around to the lodge, and then we went in and had our $100 hamburgers, you know, and walked around quite a bit out at the beginning of the golf course, and I'm just thinking, man, this is really what we need to have. You know,
like the drool on.
Oh yeah, well, I Grants Pass. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure I would like to live in a place like that, but I certainly, you know, I mean, I was thinking of it from a commercial standpoint. You know,
well, I've thought of that ever since I've been here, long before I was ever a commissioner, in regards to the tourism types of things we have here. You know, people, because I've done it. I've flown other places. I go other places. We land, we go in, we spend the night, we rent equipment, we do the recreational things there and spend money, and then we fly out. It's like people do it all over the world. And we have a lot here.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I think that you know, in terms of overall presentation and highlights, you know, Simon was concerned when I was purchasing a couple of private hangars. He said, "Where are you going with all this?" You know, well, that's a totally legitimate question. This is where I'm going with all this. One of the things that I have mentioned in passing to Cheryl, I know, on an individual basis, is that the issue of economic development funds is kind of a hot button issue for a lot of people in the community, and the ability to use economic development funds as grant match is a wonderful opportunity for the Air Force Department, certainly, but for the county to be able to say, look, we're getting a $10 million facility for $1 million, or we're getting a $1 million facility or improvement for $100,000. And so, you know, with a five-year plan, you have the ability to know what the maximum outlay is going to be over the next 5 years and plan for that. And there are other sources of funds that I will be pursuing for grant match money. The new ASAP program with ODA, that's the jet fuel tax that was came into being this past January, and they're going to begin making grants of that money, and it's strictly for small general aviation airports, just like our two airports. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they will be very anxious to do is to provide match money for federal grants, because that is so efficient. It's leveraged, you know, so highly. And with a 90% grant or a 90% match grant, and if we can free up matching money, that's the biggest limitation that we have going forward in the five-year plan, is where do we find match money for our grants? Mm-hmm. The immediate issues are the second parallel taxiway. We're getting a bridge loan to take us to the point where our grant becomes available. We received a regional solutions grant from the governor's office to get started on that environmental and engineering. And as a result of that, the FAA pulled up a construction grant for us of $2 million, $2.1 million, to build the taxiway. That's assuming that the environmental determination and engineering have already been done. So I can't wait until March of 2017 for this September 2014 grant to be funded. So we're going to get the bridge loan. It won't cost very much at all. It's very low interest, and it'll be a very short term, so that when that grant money is available, we can pay off that loan, and we will have performed most of the work. I have to have an identified source of match money for the environmental and engineering work before I can sign the contract with whatever engineering services firm we're going to use. And I have to have identified sources of match money for all of these grant programs as they come up before I can even sign an application and send it in, you know, for the, whether it's a design grant or a planning grant or a construction grant. So that's the big issue for me as the manager of the airports for the county, and for the people. If they truly benefit as much as I believe they do, I think they would know, and if they knew about all this, they would be interested in seeing that we get as many of these capital grants as we can. And still, we're not, you know, taking anything away from the general fund, because, you know.
You don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Lottery dollars or.
That's like you have a plan to make it work.
Yeah.
This is a plan to see if these things come about.
Yes.
Your involvement in the grants and obtaining grants and that kind of stuff is necessary. But
well, it's necessary, but, you know, some.
Commendable.
And in a sense, we're a little bit of a victim of our own success in that, okay, we got the grant, now we've got to come up with 10% of it, or 20% in the state, in the case of the state grant. So
could you attach a dollar amount of match to these plans?
I can.
If you would do that would be helpful.
Sure. And this is all presented in kind of a prose format, so it's difficult to pick the numbers out, but they actually are in. They're in here. So
yeah.
I'll put them in like a spreadsheet format.
Yeah, if you could do that, mm-hmm. because you've proposed that, you know, the different kinds of facilities and, you know, runways and all of that, and if we had like a dollar amount out here, you know, so we would know this is the dollar amount of match we're going to have.
Yeah.
Then that makes
sense. How much? Also,
yeah,
leave,
you know, like this $2 million one, we need to have $200,000. And
exactly.
This $1 million, we need to have, you know, $100,000 or whatever, or $50,000 or whatever it is. If you could run something like that where you actually have your text like you do here, but then there's a column so that we can match it to the text.
Sure.
That would be really helpful. A spreadsheet's good. But for those of us on the policy end and having to explain, it would be great if we say, this 2,000-foot runway, that's going to cost X, and the county has to come up with...
Yep. So I'll have text and dollars then in a visual presentation.
Mm-hmm.
That's quick and easy. Yeah.
That would be helpful. And that way, it's easier for us to answer questions about it and promote.
Yeah. And by the way, this... The plan came together fairly quickly, simply because it's the one I've been running to. I've been operating to it, you know, in my own mind.
We have to get filled out every year for the
very true
for the feds and the state. So.
Yep. And the CIP is a 5-year plan, so it all dovetails, and it's no surprises in here for me. And so, anyway, I've offered this to you. I'll ask for your support, and if you have any questions or concerns about anything as you have a chance to kind of digest this, please let's talk about it, and we'll amend it if we need to and go forward.
And on a radio show today, I told people about the airport days in September.
Oh, good. It's happening.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's almost... It almost makes me worried a little bit because all the pieces are in place now, and you know, I call up the National Guard property manager, and he goes, "Oh, yep, coming up in September, right? So, okay, you need the parking lot for the day on Saturday, and so we have that squared away, and all the volunteers are dialed in. So now the EA is going to put on their pancake breakfast, and we're going to have so many different types of airplanes on display and radio control demos." The car show is going to be bigger than it was last year because that was a big hit with everybody. And that drags people up that might not come up to see airplanes, but they love those cars. And then the people that are airplane people, they go, "Wow, look at those cars." And so there's a lot of synergy there. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, quite a bit.
And you have a space for it, which is really nice.
Yeah, we do. So.
Okay.
It's great.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you very much for your time.
And your analysis there, when will you have that completed?
I'm hoping to have we have a subcommittee at each airport from the advisory boards, and these just came in Friday, so these are going to go out. I got 8 copies of each one, and actually I have a set for you if you're interested in looking at them, and then I'll come and get them from you later.
Okay. Is that my
set? Yep. I brought
okay,
it with
good.
Me. Yeah. And mid-June. These are statements and qualifications, and so... I've asked for these engineering service companies to say, "Hey, we need a consulting company that we can use and rely on to do environmental determinations, engineering design, planning, you know, airport master plans, airport layout plans, that kind of thing." And so in this particular case, we asked for environmental and construction design services. What are your qualifications for providing those to us? We are airport sponsor. We own 2 airports. We operate them. And we have so many grants in the pipeline coming down to do all these things. How can you help us? Tell us why you're the best company to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've had WH Pacific for now almost 15 years as our consulting firm. And they've gone through some changes lately, which have made them, I think, a little vulnerable to the competition. And it's a perfect time. The contracts are up. We have one contract that they are currently working on, which we will continue with them on, and that's the West Southwest Hangar Area contract. And I'll continue working with them through completion of that job, which may be another 2 years. But there's nothing that says we can't hire an engineering services firm and have one focused on Grants Pass Airport, have a different firm focused on Illinois Valley Airport, and then a continuing contract with an existing firm going forward. So, and I'm kind of anticipating that that might happen. It doesn't mean any extra work. It just means that we are drawing from a larger pool of talent, and that's a good thing for us.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Great
job.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate it. You have a good afternoon, Larry.
I will.
And I look forward to seeing that with the...
I'll get that to you in the next couple of days.
Yeah. Don't have to rush.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
Yep.
Take care. All right. Matthew Petrarch, how are you today? Good to see you again.
And
I had a message. Alan Bolschweiler couldn't be here this morning.
I apologize for being late. I had written down at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, it worked out. It just worked out fine. Just fine.
But yeah, I apologize too for not being here sooner. April, town a lot.
It's okay. It's a busy time of year, too. So, okay, so.
Yeah, the preparation for the really busy part.
Yeah. Gearing up. We understand that. So.
There used to be a slow period in the winter.
Yeah.
It was busy, really busy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, what do you have for us this morning?
So, a few things. One, we just recently sent out a scoping letter for our Upper Bridge project. And that is in the Briggs Valley area.
Which valley? I'm sorry.
Briggs Valley.
Oh, Briggs Valley. Okay.
Bridge would be.
Oh, layout. Okay.
So in this area, if you were to go up to the top of Hayes Hill, take the 25 road, which is the right, and go out that way, about halfway between there, and you get up to the Rogue River in Briggs Valley.
Okay.
So that's a project we've been working on for a number of years, planning, and this is sending it out to solicit input from the public and to what our proposed action and kind of what we're thinking about doing out there. Roughly 3,000 acres of treatment we're planning, a variety of treatments including meadow restoration, a variety of forestry treatments throughout that area, some fuel breaks. Some of it is non-commercial stuff, some of it is commercial stuff, so a mixture of those things. And that's kind of the big project work. Sure.
And from start to finish, what do we see and what do we expect as far as
time frames?
Time frame, people working, business develop, I mean, whatever.
Yeah, so the plan is to finish up the environmental analysis going in through the winter, and then our plan is to, don't know the exact number or the type, but offer some of that, the commercial stuff. The fall... late summer, fall of 2017.
Is that anticipated result in any harvesting?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the commercial side.
That would be.
Yeah. So I don't have a number. I don't have a number to tell you. Yeah, I'm not really a little too early for that. But there's definitely going to be some commercial.
That would be in the first part of 2017. Those figures would be known.
Exactly. So probably the summer of 2017, we'll actually probably start some of our field work this year, and then finish it up next year. Any bids and such would come out, before that. But sometime.
Just think about another. If you are a buyer, potential buyer. considering the cost of travel to a nearby mill, that'd be a tremendous figure in that.
Absolutely.
Okay, rough runnings. Okay, so we don't have a mill in Joseph County. They can take this kind of order. And that would be a hindrance too, that they wanted to bid on it because they have to take up the Roseburg or whatever.
Yeah, the Holocaust range or so these days is a big portion of, fuel costs is a big driver.
Sure.
So
sure.
That is definitely a big portion of that.
Okay. An ongoing long-term project.
Yeah.
And what do you call it? Do you have a name for it?
Upper Briggs. Upper Briggs.
Upper Briggs.
We call the Upper Briggs Project.
Okay.
And then I'd be happy to, depending on your interest, I could bring some bigger maps and get more specific.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure I know the name of it, so if there's any question on it, yeah.
I'd be happy. Yeah. If you have any questions, let me know. Our Onion Mountain Fire Salvage, they started back up for the season probably a month ago, I'd say. So they're hauling logs off coming down the Shan Creek Road and out from there. So probably, I don't have the exact time frame, but probably not a month of that before they finish up.
Okay.
And you come down Shan Creek Road, that's a pretty...
Don't go up Shan Creek.
Yeah.
I did that last fall, and I kind of regretted it.
That's a pretty narrow road.
It was narrow, and like you just have to creep around the corners.
At least they don't have the road construction now.
So, yeah.
Now there was road construction on the one end, wasn't there?
Yeah. By another month of that, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Good.
With the wet, or the warm weather, I should say, coming in, we're probably phasing out of our prescribed burning from here. So I don't think we have anything planned. Unless, if the weather's changed, we may evaluate. But, I looked at it yesterday. No, just kind of get hotter. So I'm not anticipating any.
It's supposed to be almost 100, isn't it, this week?
Yeah. So we got about 500 acres of prescribed burning in this year. Probably maybe twice that of pile burning. So
people tend to forget about it. I tend to forget about it. When you talk about pile burning, you're not talking about some little 3 or 4 foot high pile of shopping. Some of these piles are absolutely
big as a house.
Yeah, and
big as a big house.
They get ignited, and those suckers are putting out flame a long way out.
So we have a combination of piles built by hand, small 3 to 6 foot ones, and then machine piles from a timber sailor or other equipment that they'll make that are. I've seen some spectacular ones out there over the years.
I don't think they do as many as those anymore, do you? You know, the huge ones for that reason.
Typically not. You have some effects of the soil after that. Mm-hmm. You effectively sterilize that soil for some time after that pile's done.
Right.
So, we try to minimize that and manage the pile size. So. Mm-hmm. But, sometimes, just by the nature of the operation, you end up with some bigger piles. So.
Yeah. I know we had one pretty big pile in our place where we cleared about an acre of brush and trees and stuff. And we stood there and looked at it and we're going, we're not burning that thing.
Yeah.
And it was too big. It was just, we thought it'd be too dangerous to burn. So we just left it.
Yeah.
It's settled down over the years.
Biodegradable.
It's about 5 years now and it's biodegrading.
So we're all, I think all of our firefighters should be on now.
Okay.
So we're ramped up and we're ready to go for fire season.
Mm-hmm.
Outlook is kind of mixed. The rain this year was certainly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's false confidence.
Too. But
yeah, that's just it.
Then you got a lot of grass growth this year.
A lot of grass, a lot of shrubs. Yeah.
So the prediction isn't as bad as last year, but it's. There'll be fires here this year, too.
Yeah. Yep, that's where we live.
Let's see. So, other big news along the Illinois River, alcohol prohibition.
And that's, that's going to be a problematic exercise because of the length of time that has been, now this has become our way of life. going to the river and doing our thing down there. But okay, it's gonna get worse before it gets better, I'm afraid. But you've got to do something. You just have to do something. It would be nice if everybody would clean up after themselves.
Yeah, I wish it didn't come to that.
Sure.
Yeah. So probably going to affect this probably in the next week or so.
Okay.
You know, it's a tool for our law enforcement to deal with the, some of the stuff there, with the goal of, you know, making a family friendly place. I talked to a lot of people, you know, who don't go down there anymore.
Sure.
And you know, it's a beautiful spot, and it's sad that, you know, the Forest Service spent a lot of money over the years with the facilities and stuff, and they're getting, you know, vandalized and trashed, and it's not safe at times. So, you know, it's an attempt to make that better.
Mm-hmm.
It is a temporary for this year. We'll try it out, see how it works, and kind of go from real value at the end and see how that
works. Well, there's got to be, a continuing light tapping is much more effective than the one-time or two-time hammer blows, because then everybody gets upset over that. And there's going to be somebody's, whatever, they feel like they've been wrong because they weren't part of that, but they got in the area, and they're going to get mail for it, too. But that's the continuation of reminding, no, you can't do that here. And to, instead of letting go to the point where you've got to do this kind of stuff. And but it's just, people are not naturally going to do. A minimal part of people, of our society, will naturally do things well. And okay, so that would be reinforced. Okay, you know, remind you, you can't do this anymore. Okay, I know. I don't like it, but okay, yeah, you're right. And then they conform to it. And but that has to be a continuing, ongoing process.
I don't know if this has happened there, because I really haven't tracked it. But one of the things that is a factor in some of the drownings on the river is drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And because if somebody has been drinking, and then they said, "Oh, I'm going to swim across the river," you know, and they jump in. Well, the shock to the body causes the heart to stop. You know, alcohol and cold water, and your heart will stop. So, a lot of people don't realize that, but I've seen it happen. So, you know, they have four or five beers or six, or you know, they lose track, and the next thing you know, they think they can swim the river. And you know, it's not because they're intoxicated.
Do anything you want to do.
Well, that's just it. And they may not, you know, it's not just the intoxication. It's the physiological aspect of it that your body can't cope with it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it becomes tragic. So let's just hope it works.
Yeah.
And makes it a nicer place for the families and not lose anyone down there and that kind of thing. So, because I've not been there. I've seen pictures of it, and I know people that have gone there, and it's a beautiful spot here. So, yeah, and it should be shared by everyone and not ruined by a few. So, good. Okay.
Robert Ward, the Forest Supervisor, signed our record of decision for the travel management. That's been ongoing for a number of years now, but that's kind of the final decision on that. That was designating a system of, I believe he came and met with you last fall.
Yeah, and what is this? He is not here.
He's been in Medford.
No, I mean, what did he retire? I thought he had retired.
No, he's not here.
Oh, okay.
So he's
on the board.
I thought he retired.
Okay.
So
what is the effect of that?
So that is, what it does is it designates a system of roads on the National Forest System that people can drive on. And in the past, it was you could drive anywhere unless off-roading, I should say. You could drive anywhere off-road unless it said you couldn't. And now it says you can't drive anywhere off-road unless there's a spot where you can.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a flip-flop. And in addition,
so it has to be like a designated trail off-road or something?
Or sometimes there's designated areas, you know, where people can drive anywhere in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then it designates that system of roads. So that the final decision on that was signed last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And the next step will be to develop a map It's a free map. You know, it's about the size of one of those that is given out to the public, and it shows all those roads that people can drive on.
When will that map be available?
In any Forest Service office.
Oh, when? Okay. When?
I don't have an exact date, likely June or July.
Okay, because I'd like to get one.
Absolutely. As soon as it comes out, I'll make sure that it comes.
Okay.
And the contentious issues, how many of those were really processed, thought through, and applied to that? Because of the issues of the connecting road between a road here, road here, road here, and you could drive on either one of them. The connecting road was scheduled to be deactivated or decommissioned.
So a couple things. When the draft came out, I'm not sure, 6 months, 9 months ago, and there, a lot of time was spent trying to solve some of those mm-hmm. problems where it's a number of inadvertent mistakes were corrected to, like, you know, like, oh, we missed this section of road here, and, you know, so, and then in addition, a number of individuals and groups objected to the draft decision, and it went through an objection process where some of those things got worked out, some of those things didn't get worked out, and the final decision that was signed Friday incorporated some of those and clarified some of those. Some of those did change, so it was kind of a combination of things. So the next step would be to publish the map, and then once that's published, then and available to the public, then people that can be enforced as far as you know, if mm-hmm. if you're on the road or on out of the road, you know, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, if anyone chooses to litigate it now. Now is the opportunity for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and when you get those maps, could you provide a few of them to
absolutely.
Us here? I mean, I want one personally, and
them
one to show people. You know, well, if they come in here and are wanting to know information about the maps, and
absolutely,
or have them in the Forest Department,
and yeah. and show them where they're available, or it's always nice to have those.
I'm not telling you anything new. You know this, and you've heard it 1,000 times, I'm sure, but you have the U.S. Forest Service puts out the prospective, now's the time to comment. And it's almost the idea of why bother? Because they're not going to listen to anything we say anyway.
Well, I would say we do. We absolutely listen to you. Now, not, you know, recognizing that no matter what we do, we're never going to satisfy everybody.
Never.
You know, so there's some people that we call, you know what, we totally missed that, let's change it. And there's some like, well, we purposely did it, here's why we did it. And, you know, they're still not satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a process for them to either they can object to that, you know, an administrative process they can object and get a response back. And then they always have the choice of, you know, doing the litigation route too. So.
Okay. Well, I said this to you before too. The amount of contact that we have had, I should say, I've had as a commissioner with the U.S. Forest Service has been wonderful because of your involvement. I mean, you've done a masterful job from my evaluating of things, of breaking down a lot of those walls of isolation. I don't know why the BLM is not here this morning. But I'm not going to go, oh, I'm shocked, because it's sort of like, okay. And but I commend you again for what you have done to lower the temperature, so to speak, and the automatic opposition to everything. And I appreciate that. But it just, there's a lot of discussion or people's minds that are there that, well, why bother them about the hill beans anyway? So. And then they get imposed upon us, and they see, well, you didn't say anything earlier, so. But I do commend you for your coming in and your openness that you have.
And I can tell you, you know, I you know, when we put out, you know, a letter to the public, you know, I am really interested in hearing what they have to say. Like I said, they're not always going to like what I,
sure.
you know, and,
sure.
and I'm never going to solve that problem.
Sure.
You know?
And
but,
we have the same experience, so.
But, you know, there's nothing else I can at least help provide rationale
mm-hmm.
for the
right.
decision, so.
Right. Yeah, we know that. We know you can't make everybody happy at all. And particularly when it comes to some people's perception of public lands. They think the public lands, they can do anything and everything and whatever they want, whenever they want, and devil may care. But and not only does it belong to them, but it belongs to other people too, and you have to be able to balance those. And attempting to balance, you're never going to make everybody happy. So
sometimes we get it right, sometimes we don't. for every person that, you know, over here saying this thing, I got another person over here saying this.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And if it's my cause, then you might get it right if you agree with me.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing I would say, though, is the travel management process and these maps, you know, is designed to be there's opportunities for change in that process.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we screwed up, we got the wrong road or did something, you know, well, the maps are designed to be updated, you know, mm-hmm. every year, every mm-hmm. couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have opportunities to change that,
mm-hmm.
add stuff, take stuff off. So mm-hmm. it's not like, boom, here it is forever. It's,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's opportunities to change sure. it. So.
Okay, thank you.
And as soon as I get those maps, I'll give them to you and some extra.
Yeah, thank you. That would be great.
And
as you see, we have maps.
here's a brief preview of
the preview map.
This is a long section of one.
Yeah, the next one will be a beautiful,
but it'll be
a beautiful Forest Service map.
And it's designed not to replace, you know, our normal map. It's
right.
It's strictly for
it's strictly for the redwoods.
And you know. You know, trying to hit some of the key
mm-hmm.
landmarks so people can
right.
Navigate with it. But it's not going to show everything like the normal Blizzard map shows.
Sure.
But they will be free and available, you know,
mm-hmm.
and online.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have some, including some software that you can, you know, view from your smartphone.
Hmm.
So. Wonderful.
Which will actually tell you where you're at.
You're lost.
No self service here.
Exactly. The other thing I had was our L Street compound.
What's that?
L Street,
mm-hmm.
Here in Grants Pass. Out for bids online. It should be, I don't have the exact date, but it's be closing. The bid process will be closing soon. Last time I checked, which was at least a week ago, $319,000.
$319,000 was the upper bid.
We had an open house out there. Lots of people, 120 some people showed up.
Hmm.
All sorts of, and you know, everything from just curious neighbors to serious investors. So.
Okay.
And of that property, because it is a historical site, how does that apply to somebody buying that and then being able just to raise all
so that? The bottom line is if someone wanted to buy it and raise it, they could.
Okay.
We went through all the process to document the historic nature of it, and that satisfied
okay.
The State Historic Preservation Office. So it's available to just start over if you want to.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, a lot of the comments we got were, there's one, if you've ever driven by or seen it, there's one center building, which is the old auto shop, is actually probably the best shape and probably
mm-hmm.
the most architecturally interesting building there. Mm-hmm. And then it's much older, mm-hmm. you know, garages and stuff, in worse shape. A lot of people wanted to keep the main building and get rid of the rest and do other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of interest in trying to preserve that main center building.
Mm-hmm.
So, but bottom line, whoever gets it can,
do it
you know, have options yeah. to do. So
okay.
it's not limited.
Okay.
It's not like you have to do it.
Yeah. Good.
That is all the stuff I have on my list.
Okay.
There's
good list. Anything you have to ask?
You have put out a order banning fires this year? For
not yet.
No, port fires this year.
No, I did. They just don't listen to me.
We put out an order. There be none this year.
Yeah, you know, at a certain point, I'm sure we'll have a campfire restriction at some point.
Yeah.
Not quite there.
Well, we issued a press release last week that we would not be issuing any fireworks display permits in the unprotected areas. And I said the wrong word this morning. I got corrected by Commissioner Heck. So thank goodness I did, because I said the wrong word. But fireworks displays and whatever they're called. What are they called, Commissioner Heck?
Fire booms. I'm not sure.
The booms. Okay. Anyway, we put that out, and that we're not going to be issuing any permits in the unprotected areas, and to directed people to, if they're in a district or a town that has fire protection service, they need to go talk to them. And I know there was some concern from the state forestry department that asked us about that. And so we went ahead and talked about it last week and issued our notice on that, that we would not be allowing that. And that way everybody has clear direction that in the unprotected areas,
no
fireworks displays. So.
And I mean, it's, as you well know, the good thing about all the rain we've had is all the rain we've had. The bad thing is all the rain we've had. Because all the, like you said, all those weeds and stuff, that kind of stuff.
That are now about salt
I go to some different yard. It's like, wow.
Biggest elephant grass.
Right. It's always funny because you have people that have, predict what the fire season is. And like, oh, it didn't get any rain this winter. It's going to be a bad fire season. And then, like, next year. Oh, got all this rain this winter. It's going to be a bad fire season.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, the worst fire season is when you don't have enough moisture because there's nothing up in the hills. And so, yes, you're right, but we say the same thing. But because this year of all the grass and everything, if people don't get that grass down, you'll get more of those campfire, lawnmower, weed whacker type fires. And so I keep reminding everybody at the meetings, get the grass down, clean your gutters, trim up those trees, get it done now before the fire season. So anyway, well, thank you, Matt. That's very good.
Yeah.
A lot of good things going on. And I know you come in quarterly, correct?
Whatever you guys would like is what I'll do. So.
I was just going to say to you that we understand that with fire season coming up, if you have a scheduled time and you can't make it, just let us know.
Okay.
I know I got a message from Mr. Balschweiler this morning at BLM due to something that he had come up that he couldn't be here, and I understand that. So he said, I'll come in, his secretary says, well, he can come in, another time, or he can wait until he comes again with Matt. And I said, hey, just wait till the next time, because I know it's a busy time of year. So that's okay with us.
Well, it's important to me, though.
Well, it's important to us, too, and I'm glad that you've been doing it, because as Commissioner Heck said, it's been very encouraging and informative for you to come here. And it's nice to get to know who's out there, because I know as I drive around, I think about you and the job you're having to do, because now I know who you are, and that's nice.
Yeah.
So, thank you. Appreciate it very much.
Anything on relationship. If you don't know who people are, it's easy to disagree or agree. I mean, it's easy. But if you know who they are, then you go, oh, I wonder what his idea is.
Yeah.
I'll check with him if I have that kind of thing. So not, but it's good to have a better communication. It's good.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So, yeah.
I look forward to getting those maps, too.
Yes, as soon as they come
great.
Out, I'll get them for you.
Thank you
so
much. And have a good summer.
Thank you.
Yeah, in the full intent of that word.
Yeah.
A good
summer. A good summer. now that you've been here a while, going into the next season. Very good. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Good to see you again. Take care.
Love, joy, peace, all the time.
Okay. Do we have anything else we need to talk about? I put on the desk. I had Terry design this town hall feedback form. Maybe I put it in your box. The town hall. That's my copy.
Okay.
So that when we go to town halls, we can take and people can give us some feedback on if they were afraid to ask a question or have an additional question.
Yes. Yes.
They can have these. Okay. And all right. Being we have no further business, it is 12 noon, and we are adjourned.